We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 2, verses 33 to 43. Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras. Verse 33. Shri Kaviruvacha Manye kutaschil payamachitasya padam vijapasanamatanityam vidvikna burdhyat asaratma bhavat vishvatmana yat. She, Kavi, said, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Who remembers the question for this answer? Here we have an answer. Yes, Adi Purush? What is the highest good? Very good. And also he was asking about freedom from fear. Freedom from fear. Or maybe that was Vasudev. Vasudev was asking about that. I believe that our friend King Nimi was also asking about the fear as well. Let's see, verse 31. Anyway. Vasudev had that concern. He had that concern that he was afraid, he had some anxiety from the curse of the Brahmanas. So he was in an anxiety how to get free from fear. So, what else do you remember from yesterday's classes? Chapter 1, how not to cheat devotees. Chapter 2, how to cheat devotees. Okay, what else? Yes? Okay, the most auspicious quality of a devotee is association with other devotees. Okay, yes? If I couldn't quite understand. You destroy your life by committing Vaishnava aparat. Very dangerous. Yes. That we should be afraid of. That should be our fear. If we have some fear, that should be our fear. Not to commit offense to devotees. Not to criticize. Okay, yes. Yes, no point in asking a sadhu how are you if you meet them. Yes. Ultimate good. Oh yes, I asked some of you to ask that question. Did anybody ask that question? Did somebody?
Nobody came.
Nobody?
Nobody came for me.
Nobody came for you to ask? Oh. Nobody who you could ask that question. Did you ask some?
No, sometimes when you meet your Guru Maharaj.
Oh, of course.
You can say, how are you? So what do you say?
Yeah, you can say, how are you? I mean, that is social etiquette. That is, but I don't know. I mean, what do you say that when you meet your Guru Maharaj? Sometimes, okay. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. We are not so much in the Vedic culture these days. Yes. I couldn't talk. I didn't say anything. Actually, we didn't speak until we were spoken to. As far as Srila Prabhupada is concerned, we didn't, you know, I thought, who am I to say something to him? I didn't, you know, if he spoke to me, then I would say something. But otherwise, I didn't speak. It was just like, okay, if he wants to talk to me, then he'll speak. Why should I waste his time? You know, I didn't. And Prabhupada's time was very valuable. I was engaged so much in service that I didn't have time so much to associate. He was here, he was in the temple, but I had to serve him, and I had to serve the deity, so where would I find time to go and have some conversation? No time. We didn't have so much time in those days, even though in India we were lucky to have association of Prabhupada, but we didn't, we just did our service, and we didn't. His room was open, but it was We didn't feel it was so much for us, it was for the people, outside people. In Calcutta he had many friends and they were always coming to see him, old friends, family friends, and so we didn't take his time so much. We didn't take his time. Okay, anything else from yesterday's classes? Yes?
Well, the youngsters, after being cursed by the Brahmins, they did not go to Krishna, but they came to Dashin.
Yeah, the other boys, they did not go to Krishna after they got cursed. They were too ashamed. And even King Agrasena didn't tell Krishna. Without Krishna's knowing, he just ground it to bits, threw it in the ocean, and that was that. Of course Krishna knew, because he was, what was his name in Sanskrit there? Kalatmana. Kalatmana. He was just waiting now. He was like a ticking clock or bomb waiting to go off. And so the time was coming for the end. So now we will consider, we have the answer, the first answer. All the verses between 33 and 43 will be answers to the question, what is the highest good? Yes? Yes, they work to fulfill the will of Krishna. That's right. By cursing his family. Cursing his family. Okay, so in the purport, paragraph 1 of 33, in the opinion of Srila Sridhar Swami, the word asadatma bhavat in this verse indicates that the living entity is constantly disturbed by fear because he identifies his eternal self with the temporary material body and its paraphernalia. Similarly, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated, bhakti patikula deha geha desh hasaktim, because of one's attachment to one's temporary body and so-called home, family, friends, and so on, one's intelligence is always disturbed by fear, and one is unable to appreciate or practice pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So-called religious activities executed in the bodily conception of life are always accompanied by fear and anxiety about the ultimate result. Why should religious activities be accompanied by fear and anxiety? Because they want something, right? They think religion is for satisfying our material desires. And what happens if we don't get it? What happens if we get it in such a way that we don't appreciate it? And how sometimes Krishna might do that. He might fulfill our desire in such a way that we won't want it again. And he says that, actually, in Srimad Bhagavatam. But pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead frees one from fear and anxiety, because it is executed on the platform of Vaikuntha, or the spiritual plane, where there is no fear or anxiety. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the process of bhakti yoga is so powerful, even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, in which one is practicing devotional service through rules and regulations, the neophyte can have a direct experience of fearlessness by the mercy of the Lord. As one's devotional service becomes mature, the Lord reveals himself to the devotee, and all fear is totally vanquished forever. So a lot of us, as neophytes, we did a lot of things, courageous things for Krishna in the early days, and I'm sure in other countries they are still doing, even though they are maybe just new devotees, that they go out on the streets and they try to preach. And so even though we were neophytes, or are neophytes, still we're... we have this courage to do things that normally we would never do. And what to speak of the mature devotee? Example is Prahlad Maharaj. Although he was tormented by his father in so many ways, he was not afraid. And his father just couldn't believe it, how this small 5-year-old boy is unafraid. He's like a dog whose tail cannot be straightened. He was unafraid. And when he was ready to kill him with the sword, because Prahlad, why was he not afraid? Because he saw Krishna, he saw Nisinga in the pillar. He saw him everywhere. And so he was not afraid. So this is also referring to the mature devotee. Verse 34, even ignorant living entities can very easily come to know the Supreme Lord if they adopt those means prescribed by the Supreme Lord himself. The process recommended by the Lord is to be known as Bhagavat Dharma, or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll go to the purport, paragraph 2. So Bhagavad Dharma, as Bhurijan Prabhu was explaining on the first day, is explained here in Canto 11, and also we heard it's in Canto 6 as well. Not so many places, but here it's directly spoken. So paragraph 2, Bhagavad Dharma is so confidential that it is spoken by the Lord Himself. The essence of Bhagavad Dharma is given in Bhagavad Gita, wherein Krishna personally instructs Arjuna. So what is the essence of Bhagavad Dharma? What's the Bhagavad Gita verse, since today is Gita Jayanti? What is that verse? Essence of Bhagavad Dharma? Yes? Sarva Dharmam Pritaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. Essence of Bhagavad Dharma. Surrender to Krishna. Yet in the 11th canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord will give instructions to Uddhava that surpass even the teachings given to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. As Srila Prabhupada has stated, undoubtedly Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just to encourage Arjuna to fight, yet to complete the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructed Uddhava. The Lord wanted Uddhava to fulfill his mission and disseminate knowledge which he had not spoken even in Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, it is understood, knowledge that will be presented here by the nine Yogendras is not the personal concoction, but is authorized knowledge originally spoken by the Lord himself. Paragraph 3, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, living entities in the course of their wanderings throughout the cycle of birth and death lose all trace of the personality of Godhead. But when they hear the eternally auspicious topics spoken by the Supreme Lord for their benefit and understand their eternal identities as spirit souls, the realized experience of being an eternal servant of Krishna becomes the basis of Bhagavad Dharma. In the soul's experience as a pure Vaishnava or servant of God, there is no consideration of being different from God or the same as God, nor is one interested in the kingdom of material sense gratification. Pure devotee simply perceives his particular devotional service to the Supreme Lord and sees himself as an individual, part and parcel of the ultimate shelter. So that's very, very comforting to know that there is a shelter beyond this material world. Because if you think of what is going on today in this world, it's very, very disturbing, very agitating. A pure devotee experiences that his very being is tied by ropes of loving devotion to the ultimate shelter himself in one of his direct personal expansions. And in such a perfect state of consciousness, the devotee can perceive the all-pervading variegated forms of the Absolute Truth. Verse 35, O King, one who accepts this process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead will never blunder on his path in this world. Even while running with eyes closed, he will never trip or fall. So a lot of us, at some point or other, may have been running with eyes closed while we do our devotional service. Maybe not at some point, maybe all the time we are running with our eyes closed. But still, don't worry. We will not trip or fall. So it's quite interesting to hear what it means to have your eyes closed. And we will hear in the purport some of the meanings. We will also hear from some other source here, if I can find it. Yes, over here. From Bhaktisandarbha. Also, a little bit what that means. So go to paragraph 2 of the purport. The essential point to be understood here is that when a living entity surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God, and he tells the Lord, My dear Lord, although I am most sinful and unqualified, and for so long have been trying to forget you, now I am taking shelter at your lotus feet. From this day on, I am yours. Whatever I possess, my body, mind, words, family, riches, I am now offering at your lotus feet. Please do with me as you like. So that's the prayer of surrender. It's not easy to say that. Do with me as you like, O Krishna. The Supreme Lord Krishna has repeatedly given assurance in Bhagavad Gita he will protect and redeem such a surrendered living entity, bringing him back home, back to Godhead. for an eternal life in the Lord's own kingdom. Okay, what verse? What's a famous verse that Krishna says about bringing you back to Godhead? He will bring you back to Godhead. Moksha Shami. Yeah, okay. Moksha Shami Mashicha. Another one? Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Very good. Anything else? How about Patijane Priyosime? What is it? Manmana Bhavamadbhakto Majaji Mam Namaskaro Mame Vaishasi Satyam Te. Patijane Priyosime. Yes, you will come to me. Dukalaya Mashashatam. Ti Mahatmana Sangsidim Param. Yes. So many times he promises that he will bring us back. So we should believe him. That he will do. He will take. We are doing our part. We are endeavoring as sadhana bhaktis, bhaktas, and he will take us back. Thus the qualification of surrendering to the Lord is so great and spiritually potent that even if a surrendered soul is deficient in other aspects of pious life, his elevated status is protected by the Lord himself. In other processes, however, such as yoga, because one depends upon his own determination and intelligence, does not actually seek shelter of the Lord, one is subject to fall at any moment, being protected only by one's own flimsy, limited potency. So think about that. The yogis, they have their own power. They don't depend on the Lord. Of course, they have to depend on the Lord, but they think they're doing it themselves. So we'll go down to the end of that paragraph. Sridhar Swami states, even if running with both eyes closed, a devotee on this path of Bhagavad Dharma will not stumble. Closing one's eyes refers to being in ignorance of standard Vedic literature. As it is said, Shruti and Smriti scriptures are the two eyes of the Brahmanas. Lacking one of them, a Brahmana is half blind, and deprived of both, he is considered completely blind. So some of us may be half blind or completely blind of Shruti and Smriti, but even though if we are following this path of Bhagavad Dharma, then we will be saved. Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha explains what this means. He says that the performance of devotional service is not dependent on careful attention to a host of rules and regulations. So many rules and regulations. Prabhupada, in the beginning, he said, if I were to tell you all the rules, you would faint. And then in one purport of his Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was commenting on, there was a kind of a movement while Prabhupada was here to have a lot of complicated rules for the deity worship. When Prabhupada was here, and Prabhupada said, they are introducing all these complicated rules, but they cannot finish their 16 rounds. As he said in the purport, that we had a very simple deity worship, only one mantra, and that was Brahma Samhita. We chanted the whole time during our puja, bathing, dressing. We just changed. And it was good for me because of Govinda Madhipurisham, I was worshipping Radha Govinda. So it was exactly the person I was worshipping. It was Govinda. We didn't do, of course, we had the mantra for waking up and putting to sleep. We had those mantras, and that was it. Nothing else. And we just did the Brahma Samhita the whole time. And what else did we do? When we entered the deity room in the morning, we would say Jayati Jananivaso, the verse from 10th canto. When we entered the deity room, that's all the things we had the Prabhupada gave us. And we in India, we never got the deity worship books because the books never came to India. So I never had to change. So let's see what it says here in this purport. So that is one thing that my eyes were closed. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has clearly stated, even if a devotee is lacking in Vedic knowledge or ignorant of Vaishnava literature, the Lord personally enlightens him from within his heart if the devotee is actually engaged in loving service to the Lord. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada states, when Lord Chaitanya was in Banaras promulgating chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, thousands of people were following him. Prakasananda, a very influential and learned scholar in Banaras at that time, derided Lord Chaitanya for being a sentimentalist. Sometimes philosophers criticize the devotees because they think most of the devotees are in the darkness of ignorance and are philosophically naive, sentimentalists. Actually, that is not the fact. There are very, very learned scholars who have put forward the philosophy of devotion. But even if a devotee does not take advantage of their literature or his spiritual master, if he is sincere in his devotional service, he is helped by Krishna himself within his heart. So the sincere devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness cannot be without knowledge. The only qualification is one carry out devotional service in full Krishna consciousness. Yes, so Arjayananda, he could not, when Prabhupada was giving him the Gayatri Mantra, he could not pronounce the words at all. And Prabhupada just gave up on trying to teach him how to pronounce the Gayatri Mantra. But still, Jayananda went back to Godhead because of his sincere service to Srila Prabhupada. There are many examples. In our literature, the illiterate Brahmana, who was met by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in South India, his qualification was Guru Nishtha. He had faith in his spiritual master, and he followed his instruction, although he could not read properly. His guru told him to read the whole 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Chaitanya saw him, and he saw that he was actually reading Bhagavad Gita, not the people who thought they were reading Bhagavad Gita just by reading the slokas, but he was reading Bhagavad Gita with his heart. So he was the actual Gita scholar. So we'll go to the purport, second to last paragraph. Our purport writer has commented, "We have seen many sophisticated Sanskrit scholars and learned experts in the details of Vedic sacrifice who can hardly even follow the basic principles of human life, namely no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, and no intoxication. Such brilliant scholars and ritualistic performers are generally seen to be attached to materialistic conception of life and are fond of mental speculation. Although in Bhagavad Gita the Lord himself is given perfect knowledge for all time, such so-called scholars consider themselves more intelligent than the Lord, thus speculate on the meaning of Vedic literature. Such speculation certainly constitutes a fall from perfect spiritual life. What then is to be said of materialistic fruitive activities, which are illusory in every sense of the term? The transcendental devotees are able to remain aloof from the pollution of fruitive activity and mental speculation, and that is the essential purport of this verse." Interesting. So maybe we don't need those two eyes. I mean, if the two eyes are going to be fruitive activity and mental speculation, then better to be blind. So then, from Raga Vart Mika Chandrika, it talks about this verse. "One of the symptoms of devotional service to me is that as soon as a person embarks upon this path, in spite of mistakes and oversights in his execution, he remains unaffected and his devotion unscathed." So then, it is said in Raghavartmika Chandrika, the word yan in the first sloka refers to all the devotional processes beginning with hearing and chanting. Thus even, now here's another meaning of eyes closed. Even if shravana, kirtana, and so on are imperfectly performed, the sadhaka's devotional life is not endangered. So that's another meaning of eyes closed. We'll hear another meaning from Vishnu Chakravarti in Madhurya Kadambini. He's commenting on this verse in the third nectar shower. He says, "Does neglecting or failing to complete some of the angas of bhakti produce nam aparad?" Nam aparad. "Never. Committing sin on the strength of the holy name refers to the intentional commission of sin, while thinking that the power of devotional activities will nullify the bad effects. Sin refers to acts condemned by the scriptures that require atonement, unlike the path of karma, where the Shastra condemns failure to do the right perfectly. It never condemns failure to perform all the angas on the path of bhakti." And so it's not an offense if we sometimes don't do all the things, all the 64 angas, all the things listed in Nectar Devotion. Now he comments, then he quotes this verse and verse 34. And he says, here the word nimilya, closing the eyes, means the person has eyes. He's not blind, but he has closed them. So he might even have knowledge of the scripture. The word dhavan, running, means to proceed rapidly, placing the feet in an overstepping, unconventional manner. So he's not running, he's running in a strange way, he's just here and there. And naskalet means without stumbling. These are the direct meanings. This verse refers to a person who takes shelter of devotional service and is practicing the primary angas. The meaning is that such a person, though knowing all the angas of bhakti, even if he neglects some of the secondary angas as if ignorant, he neither commits any aparad nor is he deprived of the goal. So here's another very interesting meaning of closing the eyes. So closing the eyes does not mean ignorance of scripture, shruti and smriti, considered as one's two eyes, for that contradicts the direct meaning. Closing the eyes and running, or deliberately neglecting some of the angas of bhakti and eagerly pursuing the goal, does not allow the devotee to commit the 32 seva aparads. As already mentioned, this verse refers to a person who has sincerely taken shelter of the process of bhakti as given by the Lord himself, in which case there is no question of intentional seva aparads. It's a very interesting comment from Adarya Kadambani by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. It's what it means, closing the eyes, so many meanings. Okay. So verse 36, in accordance with the particular nature one has acquired in conditioned life, whatever one does, with body, words, mind, senses, intelligence, or purified consciousness, one should offer to the Supreme, thinking, this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayan. So isn't this a, we have this, what verse in Bhagavad Gita is similar to this? But there's a difference here. It's for Krishna's pleasure. You do everything for Krishna's pleasure. So how this is deeper, how this is, we're expanding on Bhagavad Gita here. So the essence of our bhakti is to do it for Krishna's pleasure. To do everything for him, that what he likes. A paragraph 1. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented in this regard, that person who engages all the sensory activities of his body, mind, words, intelligence, ego, and consciousness in the service of the Lord cannot be considered to be on the same level as a karmi working for his personal sense gratification. Although apparently still a conditioned soul, one who offers the fruits of all his activities to the Lord can no longer be touched by the countless miseries that arise from reactions to materialistic activities. So he might still be in the modes, or somebody might be in the modes doing his work, but if he's offering it to Krishna, then he's not like a karmi. So then we go down into the last paragraph of the purport, about 6 lines down in that paragraph. But when such a pious person actually becomes attached to chanting and hearing about the personal qualities of the Lord, when love thus becomes visible, he's considered to be reaching the mature stage of life. So the point is that it's an unripe mango. When you're in the beginning stage, it's still a mango, but it's an unripe mango. So then we'll go to verse 37. A famous verse, which you also have to know. Mayam tritya vinivesitasya rishat apetasya vipayaya smriti tanmayaya to bhuta bhajetam hakyai vayesham guru devatatma. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. When living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. So, purport, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the objection may be raised. Since fear is caused by ignorance, it can be dispelled by knowledge, and there is no need to worship the Supreme Lord. So the Gyanis may say that. Living entity falsely identifies with his material body, family, society, and so on. He simply has to give up this false identification. Then what will Maya be able to do? Right? Just give it up. Easy, right? Give up all your friends, your family, your whatever you have, and no more problems, right? No, wrong. What Gita says, simply renunciation is not enough. You must have a higher taste. You can give up everything, but if your mind is dwelling on sense objects, then forget it. But Shirasami has quoted another verse from Bhagavad Gita. Devihesha gunamayi mama maya divatya mam evaye papatyante maya metam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered to me can easily cross beyond it. Okay, so then it talks about, the purport talks about our position as jiva, very small, dependent on Krishna, and Krishna is the only independent person. And then he talks about the, in the next paragraph, the chit shakti, potency that enlightens us. When we have a spirit of independence, we come here and we become under the Bahiranga Shakti. So we get punished. First punishment is we lose our relationship with Krishna, and we have to have a relationship with his gross body and other gross bodies. Phantasmagorical forms, here it says in the purport. And then we go to the second to the last paragraph, and it talks about anandamaya. We want pleasure. Now we're suffering because we're looking for pleasure in dead things. But if we turn our face to Krishna, then we will get eternal pleasure. So Vishwanath comments, fear or samsara takes two forms, the form of reversal and the form of forgetfulness. Reversal means thinking I'm this body, different from the soul. Forgetfulness means not remembering I am spirit. So who is that? What is a symptom? A person becomes devoid of questions concerning the past and future, like who am I? What should I do? What was I before? What will I be after? This fear arises by the maya of the Lord. And then we hear from Bhagavad Gita, Smriti Brahmsha Buddhi Nasho Buddhi Nasha Pranashiti. When you lose your memory, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, you fall down. Because of this, the intelligent person, getting his intelligence by the mercy of Guru's lotus feet, should fully worship the Lord by pure bhakti, ekaya, devoid of karma or jnana. So Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, in a purport, 10th chapter, verses 4 and 5, says, fear is due to worrying about the future. A person in Krishna consciousness has no fear because by his activities, he's sure to go back to the spiritual sky, back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, his future is very bright. But others, however, do not know what their future holds. They have no knowledge of what the next life holds. So therefore, they are in constant anxiety. So difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. In another purport, 326.16, Prabhupada says that just like the material elements are caused by the Supreme Lord, the body is a product of the soul. Therefore, the material body is called dvitiya, or the second. So in this verse we have the word dvitiya. So what is that dvitiya, that second? It's your body. You are the first. The soul is the first. And then we have a second one here, and that's our body. And so this is in the chapter on creation, Kapiladev, that just like there's the Paramatma, and that causes the whole material elements in creation, so our soul causes this second thing here, which is our body. And if we're absorbed in this second element, Prabhupada says, or second exhibition of the spirit, then you'll be afraid of death. And this is duality. Now there's another nice place where Prabhupada quotes this verse in the last chapter that Prabhupada translated when he was on this planet, 10.13.13. When Krishna saw his friends, the cowherd boys, were frightened, he, the fierce controller even of fear itself, said, just to mitigate their fear, my dear friends, do not stop eating. I shall bring your calves back to this spot by personally going after them myself. So they were eating, but then the calves wandered away, and we know what happened next. And so Krishna said, don't worry. So Prabhupada says, in the presence of Krishna's friendship, a devotee cannot have any fear. Krishna is the supreme controller, controller of even death, which is supposed to be the ultimate fear in this material world. And so if we make friendship with Krishna, we'll have no more fear. Now verse 38 goes on about this duality. Although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul experiences it as real under the influence of his own conditioned intelligence. This imaginary experience of a world separate from Krishna can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desiring. When the conditioned soul dreams at night of something desirable or horrible, or when he daydreams of what he would like to have or avoid, he creates a reality that has no existence beyond his own imagination. The tendency of the mind is to accept and reject various activities based on sense gratification. Therefore, an intelligent person should control the mind, restricting it from the illusion of seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is thus controlled, he will experience actual fearlessness. So last year I quoted a saying from one of the great religions of the world that says, we do not see things as they are, we see things as we are. So when we look at the world, we look at it through our mind. We have our own conceptions. And that's how we see the world. Now, in the third paragraph to the end, Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has used the word manasa pratyaksha to describe the experience of material life. Manasa pratyaksha means that which is experienced only within the mind. So it's all in your mind, all these problems that we think we have. So then he quotes Gita. Rajavidya rajaguryam pavitamidam uttamam pratyakshavagamam tarmyam sukam kachum avyayam. So this is the actual pratyaksha. The real pratyaksha, pratyakshavagamam tarmyam, is when you engage in devotional service and you experience Krishna. And you experience the happiness of association with devotees. And you experience your own eternal nature. So, we will go to the last paragraph. Shri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made the following comments in this verse. Control of the mind is a result of living a life of devotional service to the Lord. But the influence of fixed devotional service, accepting and rejecting mind, can stop its thirst for sensory enjoyment apart from Krishna. In transcendental Krishna consciousness, there is no contradiction, pettiness, or lack of ecstasy. It's not like a material object, which proves temporary and constantly miserable. And so we should strive for this. Control of the mind. It will happen automatically just by chanting the holy name. Devotional service. Okay? So let's go on to... Oh, I have a quote here, which is quoted actually by Vishnu Chakravarti from 7th Canto, 7:15-25. One conquers rajas and tamas by predominance of sattva. One conquers sattva by being indifferent to the results of actions. One conquers all of these obstacles quickly and easily by devotion to Guru. So if you have devotion to your spiritual master, all obstacles will be conquered. Prabhupada said, I can kick everything out just by one kick of my foot. All of your anarthas, don't worry about them. But if we just are devoted to our guru, then we can become free. Okay. Here is a comment from Jiva Goswami's Bhaktisandarbha. He raises an objection, fearing that someone may object, saying, isn't it true when one attempts to control the mind by repeated practice of yoga, interruptions in his devotional service remain? So then Jiva Goswami says, I say, one who engages in devotional service is attached to devotional service is successful in controlling the mind. And this is explained in the next verse, verse 39. How to control the mind? And also, it is said that this verse describes how asakti influences a devotee. Verse 39, asakti. 39 and 40. 39 will be asakti and 40 will be prema. So I'll sing this verse because it's very beautiful. Shinvan supatra niratanga pane janmani karmani chayani loke gitari namani taratakani kayan vilaja vicharira sangha. An intelligent person who has controlled his mind and conquered fear should give up all attachment to material objects such as wife, family, and nation, and should wander freely without embarrassment, hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord, the bearer of the chariot wheel. Holy names of Krishna are all auspicious because they describe his transcendental birth and activities, which he performs within this world for the salvation of the conditioned souls. Thus the holy names of the Lord are sung throughout the world. So, a chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam wouldn't be complete without glorification of the holy names. And we find them throughout the Bhagavatam, the glorification of the holy names. So this is the way. This is the way to actually conquer fear. What is that verse in second canto? Doubtless and fearless way of success for all. Etan nirvityamananam ichitam akutopayam yoginam nipanirnitam harinam anukirtanam. By chanting harinam, that's 2, second canto, 1:11. Oh, okay. 2:1:11. Very good. So Bhagavatam, from beginning to end, the 14th verse of the first canto glorifies the holy name. Even if you unconsciously chant the holy name, you will be free from the chain of birth and death. And then the last verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning, middle, and end, we have the glorification of the holy name. So let's see the purport. Since the holy names, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord are unlimited, no one can hear or chant about all of them. Therefore, the word loke indicates one should chant the holy names of the Lord that are well known on this particular planet. Within this world, Lord Rama and Lord Krishna are very famous. So he's talking about Ramayana, Bhagavad Gita, and Lord Chaitanya is gradually becoming famous all over the world. He predicted, Prithivite ache jato nagara vikram sarvatra pachar hoy bimarnam. In every town and village on this earth, the glories of my name will be chanted. Therefore, in conformity with the authorized statement of this verse of Bhagavatam, Krishna conscious movement emphasizes Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, along with the Panchatattva Mahamantra. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. According to Sridhar Swami, this blissful process of chanting the holy names of the Lord without any material conception is called Sugama Margam, a very enjoyable path. Similarly, Lord Krishna has described the process of Bhakti Yoga as Susukam Kartum, very joyfully performed. Shiloshan Das Thakur has sung, Shavavatar Sharashiromani, Kevala Anandakanda. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process for worshipping Krishna is Kevala Anandakanda, simply joyful. In this connection, Sri Prabhupada has stated, people in any part of the world can assemble, chant Hare Krishna, read from authorized books like Bhagavad Gita as it is, and accept Krishna Prasadam sumptuously, just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in Navadvip. So we have a reference here from Brihadbhagavatamrita. This verse is quoted. So I'll read what it says. This is chapter 3 of volume 2. Nama sankirtanam proktam krishnasya prema sampadi balishtam sadhanam shestam param akarshamantava. The sankirtan of Krishna's names is praised as the best and most powerful means to attain the treasure of Krishna prema. It is like a potent mantra that can attract precious objects from a distance. Interesting. So by chanting, we're going to attract something very precious or somebody very precious from a distance. Somebody, I don't know, I heard in a class, or maybe Burajan said, that these tantrics, they can... Was that Burajan who said that? The crocodile, yeah? He just chants a mantra and a crocodile comes in the room. So we chant our mantra and we are hoping Krishna will come. We're chanting our mantras. They do that. I also knew one who chanted a mantra by the ocean, and a watch came out of the ocean. That one needed a wristwatch, so she got a wristwatch out of the ocean. So, I mean, we can do these things, and we'll hear about this later on in Uddhava Gita, how you can perfect your mystic powers. But actually, we don't do that. We don't need that, because we have Krishna, and Krishna has all, he's Yogeshwara. He has all the mystic powers. So verse 40, another famous verse. One of the essential, most famous verses, Srimad Bhagavatam. Evam vataswa priyanam kirtya chatam udaka tutta chitta uchai hasattatara ditiraptikaya yunmaravanitati lokabhaya. By chanting the holy name of the Supreme Lord, one comes to the stage of love of Godhead. Then the devotee is fixed in his vow as an eternal servant of the Lord, and he gradually becomes very much attached to a particular name and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As his heart melts with ecstatic love, he laughs very loudly, or cries, or shouts. Sometimes he sings and dances like a madman, for he is indifferent to public opinion. Yes, so this is a description of prema. Prabhupada brought us to a very high level because we were chanting and dancing in the streets with indifference to public opinion. For many, many years, we were just chanting and dancing. That was one of my first service, 12 hours a day, Hari Nam Sankirtan. And I was a new devotee. And so, but of course, there comes a time when you just chant and dance even if there's no kirtan going on, and you start shouting and crying and laughing, and people think you're crazy. So this is what's happened, is described here. In kirtan, of course, it's natural for us. I mean, other people will think we're crazy, but sometimes even devotees will think you're crazy. So last three paragraphs of the purport, Srivishnu Chakravarti Thakur has given a very nice example to illustrate ecstatic laughing and other symptoms of love of Godhead. Oh, that thief Krishna, son of Yashoda, has entered the house to steal the fresh butter. Grab him! Keep him away! Hearing these menacing words spoken by the elderly gopi, Jarati, Krishna immediately prepares to leave the house. The devotee, to whom this transcendental pastime is revealed, laughs in ecstasy. So the person, somebody is seeing this pastime going on in their heart, and they start laughing. But suddenly, he can no longer see Krishna. He then cries in great lamentation. Oh, I achieved the greatest fortune in the world. Now it has suddenly slipped from my hands. Thus the devotee cries loudly. So, my Lord, where are you? Give me your answer. The Lord answers, my dear devotee, I heard your loud complaint, and so I've again come before you. Upon seeing Lord Krishna again, the devotee begins to sing. Today my life has become perfect. Thus overwhelmed with transcendental bliss, he begins to dance like a madman. Okay, so we'll go actually to the last paragraph. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati recommends. We study the following verse about first Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam is quoted, and then he said we should study the following verse in this connection. Pari Vadakti jano yata tata va nanu makara navayam vicharyama hari rasa madira madati mata buvi vilutama natama nirvi shama. Let the garrulous populace say whatever they like. We shall pay them no regard. Thoroughly maddened by the ecstasy of the intoxicating beverage of love for Krishna, we shall enjoy life, running about, rolling on the ground, and dancing in ecstasy. So then I also have a quote of Lord Chaitanya speaking. in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Itar Bhakyami Jita Vishastari Nirantara Krishnanam Sankirtana Kari Se Krishnanam Kabu Gaai Nachai Gahi Nahi Nachi Nahiyami Apana Ichai. Lord Chaitanya is speaking because he was challenged by the Prakashananda. I firmly believe in these words of my spiritual master, therefore I always chant the holy name of the Lord alone and in association of devotees. The holy name of Krishna sometimes causes me to chant and dance, therefore I chant and dance. Please do not think I intentionally do it. I do it automatically. So then, Prabhupada says, the secret of success is the faith in the words of the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. And he says, Lord Chaitanya never tried to be the master of the holy name. Rather, he taught us how to be servants of the holy name. What does it mean to be master of the holy name? If one chants the holy name just to make a show, not knowing the secret of success, he may increase his bile secretion, but he will never attain perfection in chanting the holy name. Okay, so we should not try to be master of the holy name. It means to use it for our own benefit, for our own fame, whatever, whatever. But we should be servant of the holy name. So Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada quotes Lord Chaitanya, I am a great fool and don't have knowledge of right and wrong. I firmly believe simply chanting the holy name can remove all misconceptions of the material world. I believe simply by chanting the holy name one can attain shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is Adi 7.96. In this age of quarrel and disagreement, the chanting of the holy name is the only way to liberation from material clutches. And then he talks about how he became mad from chanting. And that is his greatest success in life. So then, this is Madhya 23:42. Prema krame badi hoy snehaman pranay raganu raga bhava mahabhava hoy. Love of God increases and is manifested as affection, counter love, love attachment, sub attachment, ecstasy, and sublime ecstasy. So, what to expect later on when we get to the spiritual world, probably. So, we will go to Brihad Bhagavatamrita again. There is quite an explanation. I won't read all of it, but I'll just read some of it. And this is 2:4, 2:34. Okay. It's not this verse that has the explanation. So let's see. We are not able to describe completely this special ecstatic state, nor is it proper for us to do so. And even if the most perfect of scriptures, those dedicated to promoting devotional service, were to describe it in detail, the effect on ignorant people would be contrary. So this is about prema. If the ignorant people hear about it, then they will imitate Prakriti Sahajiyas. They will imitate the symptoms of prema. They will also become mad and cry and laugh and try to get some money for it or fame for it or something. And they will imitate. Gopakumar wants to learn more from Narada about the special kind of ecstasy that comes from mature love of God, but here Narada asserts he is unqualified to explain it. So what to speak of us? Prema Bhakti is beyond the reach of anyone's mind and words. Only devotees who have directly perceived it can understand it. Before a general audience, then, it is inappropriate to say very much about even the external symptoms of prema. The Srimad Bhagavatam and other bhakti shastras avoid revealing too much. Devotional scriptures anticipate that after reading prema, now here's another way of looking at it. If you read, prema is like the fire of universal annihilation multiplied millions of times. So if common people hear this, they'll be afraid to cultivate prema bhakti. Yeah, I had in Moscow, one lady came up to me and said, I'm afraid to do devotional service because I think Krishna is going to take everything away from me. I've heard that Krishna will take everything. I said, well, I think if you just chant, it's safe. You just try chanting and that'll be okay. But anyway, Sridhar Swami commenting on Bhagavatam encourages neophyte readers by portraying the symptoms of prema bhakti described therein as signs of happiness, not unhappiness. And he quotes this verse. These are signs of happiness. Sridhar Swami tactfully explains, he laughs very loudly or cries or shouts means the devotee jokingly rebukes his Lord. You have been neglecting me all this time. Now, these are some explanations. When the supreme ecstasy of prema and separation appears outwardly like supreme distress, there's nothing wrong with this except that persons lacking spiritual knowledge will misunderstand devotional service to be a miserable experience and will have nothing to do with it. And they'll turn instead to impersonal gyan to achieve liberation or materialistic karma. Rather than listen to the perfect authorities on bhakti, they'll hear from ordinary ignorant men. And so some different understandings of this verse. Verse 41. Now we're going to get back into this material world, but not without Krishna. A devotee should not see anything as being separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So this is the opposite of duality. The duality causes fear. So if you want to get free from fear, you should see everything related to Krishna. Ether, fire, air, water, earth, the sun, and other luminaries, all living beings, the directions, trees, and other plants, the rivers and oceans, whatever a devotee experiences, she should consider to be an expansion of Krishna. Thus, seeing everything that exists within creation as the body of the Supreme Lord Hari, devotee should offer his sincere respects to the entire expansion of the Lord's body. Okay. So we'll go to the second to the last paragraph. Comment by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Has warned us. If we do not see everything as a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we'll become victims of falgu vairagya, or immature renunciation. So, what a person who has this immature renunciation, when he looks at the world, what will he see? What will he say? How will he see the world?
Maya.
It's all Maya. Oh, I better just leave it all. It's Maya. Completely Maya. Very good. We have learned. Whatever we see is disconnected from Krishna. We have in our mind no relationship to Krishna's service. But if we see everything is connected to Krishna, we use everything for Krishna's satisfaction. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, one who has experienced his own true identity understands all things exist as paraphernalia for giving ecstatic pleasure to the Supreme Lord. So when you look at the world, think, this is for Krishna's, these things are all for Krishna's pleasure. What a nice way. Thus one becomes free from the separatist vision in which one sees the world as existing for one's own enjoyment. Either it's for Krishna or it's for you. So the immature renunciation means he's thinking, oh, this world is for my enjoyment. So therefore, I should give it up. I should leave it. It's for me. He doesn't see it's for Krishna. In the transcendental state, whatever a devotee sees reminds him of Krishna, and thus his transcendental knowledge and bliss increase. So this is the problem with the impersonalists. Last paragraph. The conclusion is, this verse is spoken to help the devotee of the Supreme Lord advance in Krishna consciousness. It can be understood from the previous verses of this chapter that the ultimate goal is pure devotional service to Lord Krishna. If one falsely interprets this verse to sanction the imaginary Mayavad philosophy, everything is God, one will simply become bewildered and fall from the path of spiritual advancement. Okay, so the verse could be misinterpreted by the impersonalists. Brihadbhagavatamrita also has something to say about this. Interesting. This verse is quoted 11... Is it quoted? 11.2? No, this is for the next verse. So this will prepare us for verse 42, which is another one of those very famous verses. We're getting all the wonderful verses in this section today. So what it says here, this will prepare us for our next verse. Ritual duties distract one from devotional service. This is karmakanda. Renunciation dries up one's transcendental taste for her. So if we're too much into our rituals, we'll get distracted from devotional service. And if we're too much into renunciation, we'll get dried up. Our taste will dry up. Knowledge can do her harm. But these three, when purified, faithfully serve her. So to get to that level of using everything in Krishna's service. So we don't renounce rituals. We do have our duties. We have our duties. We do have our renunciation. But everything must be used in the service of devotional service. So commentary, serious Vaishnava should give up whatever does not serve the purpose of pure devotional service. Karmakanda injunctions of Vedas obscure the path of devotion with hundreds of obligatory rituals, and practicing detachment from all worldly things dries up the attractive taste of devotional practice. The indifference recommended in devotional service, however, is distinct from renunciation undertaken by impersonalists. So here we go. This is what we need to know. So, okay, so we heard about false renunciation. What's real renunciation now? So this will be for the next verse, because one of the things that we get by performing devotional service is viraktir, or indifference. So the indifference of devotional service is different because devotional renunciation selectively rejects only those things that cannot be used in the Lord's service. And then the next verse is quoted. Bhakti parishano bhavo viraktir anyatra chaisa chika ekakala. So, and he goes on, the pursuit of knowledge weakens bhakti because realizing such truths as the divine nature of the self gives one a feeling of self-satisfaction that quells the strong urge needed to enter the Supreme Lord's service. So if you become Atma Rama, then you'll think, well, I'm fine. I'm happy. What's the need to engage in devotional service? I'm completely satisfied. I've understood I'm Brahman. Oh, why go further? Now, this is a problem. Okay, so let's go to the next verse, which is also a very, very famous verse. First I have to find it. Yes. Bhakti pareshanu bhava virakti anyatta chaisa chika eka kala prapadyamanasya yatashtatashyus Tushti, tushti, shud, apayo, nakasam. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite, for a person engaged in eating. So now, we're going to read the first paragraph of the purport. Jiva Goswami is going to help us understand which three of the things that occur from bhakti, who have taken occur for those who have taken shelter of the Lord, and which three things that occur when you eat, how they go together. Which one goes with which. We've got bhakti, direct experience and detachment. And then when you eat, we've got pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger. So for this, you might want to imagine that you're eating. You're very, very hungry, and you're about to have a very wonderful feast. And now you're going to start eating. So bhakti, or devotion, may be compared to tushti, satisfaction, because they both take the form of pleasure. So when you first start eating, you feel very happy. Oh yes, finally, I've broken my fast. So bhakti, devotion, this comes from taking shelter of the Lord. And that's compared to tushti. Bhakti and tushti go together, pleasure. And the next, parishano bhavo, and that is the experience of the Supreme Lord, and pushti, nourishment, are analogous because both sustain one's life. So as you go on eating, you feel nourished, you feel strong, you might have become weak. And then you feel, now you're feeling stronger, you're feeling nourished by the prasadam. So this nourishment, what nourishes us, is our direct experience of the Supreme Lord. So we've got bhakti, which is tushti, and we've got parishanubhava, which is direct experience, is pushti, or nourishment. And then viraktir, that is our detachment comes. And kshudapaya, cessation of hunger, because both free one from further hankering, so one may experience shanti, the peace. So after you eat so much, you become detached. Someone says, here, have another bite. Oh, I can't. So you're detached. You become detached from the feast because you've had enough. And so once you get bhakti and nourishment, you get nourished and you get pleasure, then you get freedom from hunger. And Prabhupada said that the real hunger of this world is not material, it's spiritual hunger. Everybody is starving spiritually. So the only way they can get relief from hunger, the only way they can get nourished and happy is by taking shelter in devotional service. So this will also help those people who are worried about effects of prema, that this is a very nice thing to do devotional service. So second paragraph, a person who is eating not only becomes uninterested in other activities, but increasingly becomes uninterested in the food itself according to his satisfaction. On the other hand, according to Sri Jiva Goswami, although one who is experiencing the blissful personality of Godhead Krishna becomes uninterested in anything other than Krishna, his attachment to Krishna increases at every moment. So here's a little difference in the analogy. We might become detached from eating after having a feast, but we won't become detached from having a relationship with Krishna. And that attachment will grow. We'll become detached from our material hunger. Our attachment to material things will go, but our attachment to Krishna will grow. And so that's an important difference. Therefore, it is understood the transcendental beauty and qualities of the Supreme Lord are not material, since one never becomes satiated by relishing the bliss of the Supreme Lord. The word virakti is very significant in this verse. Virakti means detachment, whereas tyaga means renunciation. So it's not exactly renunciation, it's detachment. It's natural. Renunciation implies that you have to renounce it. You're giving something up. But detachment means it doesn't. You don't care about it, really. It's not important to you anymore. Detached. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the word renunciation can be used in a situation in which one considers giving up an enjoyable object. But by considering everything to be potential paraphernalia in the service of Lord Krishna, as described in the previous verse, one need not give thought to renunciation, for one uses everything in the proper way in the service of the Lord. Yukta vairagyam uchate. So this verse is also a Yukta Vairagya verse. A very pleasant analogy of a good meal is given. A hungry man busily consuming a sumptuous plate of food is not interested in anything else happening around him. In fact, he considers any other topic or activity a disturbance to his concentration on the delicious meal. Similarly, as one advances in Krishna consciousness, one considers anything unrelated to devotional service of Krishna an obnoxious disturbance. Such concentrated love of God has been described in the second canto by the words Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. One should not make an artificial show of renouncing material world, but should systematically train the mind to see everything as an expansion of the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as a hungry materialistic man, upon seeing sumptuous food, immediately desires to put it in his mouth, an advanced devotee of Krishna, upon seeing a material object, immediately becomes eager to use it for the pleasure of Krishna. So we see that. We see devotees, pujaris. If they see some beautiful flower, something, oh, wow. Wouldn't that flower look beautiful on Krishna? Wouldn't that garland look nice on Krishna? Well, I wish I could have that flower for my deity. So that you get that. You don't even have to be so advanced. Without the spontaneous hunger to engage everything in the service of Krishna and to dive deeper and deeper into the ocean of love of Krishna, so-called realization of God or loose talk about so-called religious life is irrelevant to the actual experience of entering the kingdom of God. According to Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the path of bhakti yoga is so joyful and practical, even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, in which one follows rules and regulation without an advanced understanding, one can perceive the ultimate result. So, and we'll go down a little bit after the quote. Devotion, direct experience of the Lord, and detachment from other objects become manifest even in the beginning stage of Bhakti Yoga, since Bhakti Yoga begins at the point of liberation. Okay? And then he quotes Sarvadharma Pariticca. So, in the 10th canto, in the 29th chapter, verses 10 to 11, it was described about the gopis who went to join Krishna in the rasa dance, and how some of them were still a little bit contaminated, and some of them were immediately, they went. So here, this verse is quoted, and it is explained, according to one's level of devotional service, to that degree the transcendental aspects of one's body become prominent and the material aspects diminish. So as we undergo the process of devotional service, we do develop some transcendental aspects of our body. I think it's for all of us, we experience that by having Krishna prasadam, we lose our taste for non-veg, all these things. They become very disgusting. We don't like them anymore. If we smell, we get sick. We smell these things, we get sick. So we have developed some transcendental taste for prasadam. And even one step further is you may lose your taste for all the other things that are in the shop that are not prasadam. It's the difference between prasadam and non-prasadam. So, in this purport of 29th chapter, when one achieves totally pure love of God, the material portions of the body disappear and the body becomes completely spiritual. Nonetheless, so as not to disturb the false opinions of atheists and so as to protect the confidentiality of devotional service, Supreme Lord usually has his illusory energy exhibit the death of the gross body. Example of this is disappearance of the Yadavas during the Maushala Leela. But sometimes, again, he lets a devotee go back to Godhead in his same body, like Dhruva Maharaj. So this is interesting that this verse is quoted there to explain how our body changes from material to spiritual. So again, there's a quote from Adi Lila 7.143. Krishna chane hoy jadi anurag, Krishna vinu anyatratar nahi rahirag. If one develops his love of God and becomes attached to the lotus feet of Krishna, gradually he loses his attachment to everything else. So this verse is, Prabhupada says, you can use this verse to test how much you're advanced in devotional service. Direct experience, bhakti, and detachment. Then the next quote is also from Adi 8:25. If one's heart does not change, and this is a quote from Bhagavatam, tears do not flow from his eyes, his body does not shiver, and his bodily hairs do not stand on end as he chants Hare Krishna Mahamantra, should be understood his heart is as hard as iron. This is due to his offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord's holy name. So we have to be careful when we chant the holy name to avoid offenses. One more quote, this is from Madhuri Kadambini on this verse. This is the second shower. This verse is quoted, Bhakti, Parishan, Bhavo, Viraktir. And here it's talking about klesha, or different kinds of miseries, and the causes of klesha, and the types of klesha, five types of klesha, avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, and then the four effects of sin, parabdha, aparabdha, ruta, and bij, are included in klesha. And then he explains how bhakti eradicates klesha and also bestows auspiciousness or shubha. So the first two leaves that come up are that you become free from your klesha and you get all auspiciousness. And the shubha, auspiciousness, means you get qualities like disinterest in material affairs, interest in the Supreme Lord, friendliness, mercy, forgiveness, truthfulness, simplicity, equanimity, fortitude, gravity, respectfulness, humility, and being pleasing to all. So the two symptoms, destruction of ignorance and appearance of good qualities, occur simultaneously. So that they quote this verse from Bhagavatam to prove that they occur simultaneously. But then he says, as there is some difference in the rate of unfurling of two leaves, there is a distinction in the pace of the disappearance of undesirable qualities, ashubha, and appearance of auspicious qualities, shubha. Thus bhakti develops by specific gradual stages. So there you go. This is also explained here in Madhurika Dambini, this verse. Now one quote which I would like to give you now, which I forgot from, or maybe this is actually in the purport, which I didn't read, from verse 40 about chanting and dancing like a madman. This is from your notes, so I don't know exactly. Your quote is from the purport, I see. Madhvacharya. It's from the purport. It's really nice, and I missed it. Some devotees of the Lord exhibit external symptoms, acting like madmen. Others are introspective devotees, and still others partake of both natures. It is by one's... So how do you know who's advanced? Maybe he's not going to chant and dance like a madman and show all these symptoms. Some are introspective devotees. It is now, here's how to tell. It is by one's steadfastness and by the merciful vibrations emanating from one's mouth that one's devotion can be judged, not otherwise. That's the purport, Madhvacharya, purport of verse 40, which he had in his notes, which I thought was... 127, page 127. Yeah, I thought that was quite nice, although I missed it in my thing. Okay, the last verse for today, I mean this class, not for today. Verse 43, my dear King, the devotee who worships the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead with constant endeavor, thus achieves unflinching devotion, detachment, and experienced knowledge of the Personality of Godhead. In this way, the successful devotee of the Lord achieves supreme spiritual peace. Sounds a lot like the last verse. If you worship the lotus feet, if you engage in devotional service, you get these things. So then we'll read the purport, Bhagavad Gita 271. Vihaya kaman yasavana pumangs charati nispaha nirmamana rahankara shanti madigachati. Person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, and who is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Prabhupada comments, to become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atto Eva Shanta Bhakti Mukti Siddhikami Shakaliya Shanta. Because the devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruitive workers desire material enjoyment, jnanis desire liberation, and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. Second paragraph to the last. On the other hand, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atta Eva Shanta. Devotee is Nishkam. He has no personal desire. His only desire is to please Krishna. And Lord Shiva praises this desire. Narayana parasarena kutaschana bipiti svarga pavaganarakesh apitu yarta darshinam. A person who is devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana is not afraid of material, of anything. Elevation to the heavenly kingdom, condemnation to hell, and liberation from material bondage all appear the same to a devotee. Although the impersonalist philosopher proposes everything is one, devotee of the Lord is actually tulyartha darshi, or empowered with a vision of oneness. Prabhupada said, we are the real monists, because we see everything as Krishna's. Everything is Krishna's. Devotee sees everything as the potency of the Lord, and therefore desires to engage everything in the service of the Lord for the Lord's satisfaction. Since devotee does not see anything as dvitiya, or outside the scope of the Lord's potency, he is happy in any situation. Having no personal desire, devotee of Krishna is actually shanta, or peaceful, because he has achieved the perfection of life, love of Krishna. He's actually situated in his eternal constitutional position under direct shelter and protection of the omnipotent Parameshwara Krishna. According to Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, this verse ends the answer given by the first of the nine Yogendras. Kavi to Maharaj Nimi's first question, what is the highest good? And we have so many beautiful verses which are the answers to this question. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments on these verses? Yes? Turning point. Yeah, I know. I've had that experience of being in an airport and someone's supposed to pick me up, and no, I had that experience in Canada, Toronto, and I didn't have any Canadian money. I didn't have the address of the temple. I didn't have the phone number or anything. I just came there and nobody was there. So I said, what to do? Then I heard somebody make an announcement on the loudspeaker. And so I thought, okay, I'll make an announcement. So I said, will the Hare Krishna devotee please meet their party at the information desk? So Hare Krishna was all over. And then this one spaced out brahmachari came. Sorry, Mataji. So, yeah, Krishna, he gave me some intelligence. Because I didn't know. I was thinking, okay, I'll look at a phone book. And look. And I was trying to look in the phone book for Hare, but there was nothing in the phone book, you know. So how am I going to, you know, what am I going to do? Yeah, it happens where you really, you know, you have to do something. You have to really depend on Krishna in these situations, you know, what to do. Yeah, I did experience some fear, but then Krishna gave me, you know, some intelligence not to be afraid and what to do in that situation. I think I could have probably chanted there the whole night. Just waited the whole night. Anyway, whatever. Yeah, any questions, comments? Yes.
You said in class that sadhana bhakti will take us back to Godhead.
I didn't see. Somebody else said that.
Is
it necessary to reach a stage of prema bhakti before you can go back to Godhead? Our good fortune is that we are following Srila Prabhupada, who has given us some concessions here. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also has given concessions. So Srila Prabhupada, in his lecture on the verse Nashta Prayesha Padeshu, has said, if you just can become 75% free, then he will take care of you. You can go. Just become 75% free. Come to the level of Nishta. And if you can't do that, then just have devotion for your spiritual master, and he will take you. According to your faith, your guru nishtha, if you're very sincere, if you're a sincere devotee, you may not have achieved prema at the end of your life, but your guru will make up for what you lack. He will make up for what you lack. He said, as we have heard, Jaipatak Maharaj tells that he heard in a class in L.A. that Prabhupada said, if you are 75% free, then he will take it, then you can go back. You can go back to Godhead.
Material
desire. What the understanding that we from Bhagavatam we understand? What does that mean? Nashta prayesha padeshu, almost free. The next verse, tadarajas tamo bhava kama loba dayascheya. You must be free of passion and ignorance. Come to the level of goodness. And that is 75%. Although some traces may be there, but the predominant mode should be goodness. That's the level on which we can practice devotional service and the level of nishtha. Yeah?
Yeah, that's the thing. We should strive. Prabhupada always encourages us in the book to strive for nishtha.
Nishtha, yes. It's bhakti or bhavati, naishtiki.
Yeah. We can at least.
If we can come to the level of nishtha, then Prabhupada will help us.
We have to
do our own. He told us 16 rounds and following the four regative principles. That is the basic qualification for Prabhupada taking us. It's not so easy. You think it's easy, but a lot of devotees have trouble with it. Yes.
Refers us to a qualification to go to Bhuvanila, and then from there, prema can be achieved.
Well, prema can also, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can have prema even in this world. You can have. You can. But if you don't, then if you have devoted your whole life to Krishna, Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and you, if you have come to that, if you are, have followed your whole life, the four regulative principles, and I mean, since you've taken initiation, then that is, Prabhupada will see you. He will take care of you, yeah?
According to the Madhurya Kadambini, prema cannot be contained in this body.
Yes, prema cannot be contained in this body. So, there are some levels of prema that cannot be contained in this body. But also Chaitanya Charitamrita does say that your plant will grow, your creeper will grow, it will go to the lotus feet of Krishna, and in this earth you stay here and you water the plant, and you get the prema fall. So we have different understandings. Most probably the body will not be able to take it. But if it may happen that you may also come to that level. You may come to that level. That you water, you're having the fruits of prema, and meanwhile you're here watering by Shravana Kirtana Jala. Yeah, well, it's in the spiritual body. But he may still be here in this earth at the same time. It's a debatable question. It's a debatable question. Yeah. Well, you can talk to Jiva Goswami about that, because he's the one that. Also, the thing is, unless you have pleasure, even in the beginning, why should you stay here? Why did you stay if there's no pleasure here? Because the material world's so miserable, right? There is a difference between the material world, living your life in the material world, and living your life with the devotees. So I would say, if you put them on the scale of pleasure, then you'll have to say your material life is, there's much less. Yeah, what you experience when you join. Yeah, it may not be prema, but Krishna is giving you some taste when you first join, so that you will stay. He's giving us, and we were having pleasure out on Harinam whole day and whole night. We weren't in the material world. We didn't feel like we were completely out. It was completely pleasure. We were just doing the direct process, the Yuga Dharma, which was the most powerful thing. So we were the most powerful thing that when we joined it. That was very pleasurable, and the feast, and the chanting and the dancing and the feast, and the philosophy and the pictures. All the artists were there, and dramas, and I just saw that, there was no comparison with the material world and living in the temple. It was very austere. Austerities were there. My room, there was no window, so they cut a hole in the ceiling, and the snow was coming in on us. But we didn't care, we're so happy. It was in Boston. It was a very cold place. There was a lot of pleasure for us anyway. And coming to India also, just being with the deities, there's a lot of pleasure. I mean, there is austerities too, no water, no electricity, and sleeping on the floor and all that, but you just put it together, there's no comparison. Anywhere, holy name, deity, he's there, he's in all these, like, I was seeing him as the deity. Go in Calcutta, he was there. I was in Vaikuntha. I was with him 20 hours a day. So it's, however you see, he's there. So first, my first experience was Krishna as the holy name. And my next experience was Krishna as who I had to take care of, my deity. not I didn't see him as my deity. Garga Muni, he was our president. We used to take pictures of Govinda, our deity. And one time he looked at the pictures, he said, "Oh, looks like, his expression is changing." And I said, "Yes, every minute, every second his expression is changing. You can see, if you just sit in front of the deities and you sing, you chant, you just look at them, then they're not, it's Krishna. It's not some, something else. It's Krishna is there, and there's pleasure because he's a person, and you're there with him. And I got him all to myself because nobody used to come to the temple hardly. And so it was just me and him. And sometimes people would come. But however you see, you can see him in Bhagavatam, Gita, deities, holy name, devotees, your service. So many ways you can see Krishna. That's nourishment. That was nourishment. Then your life is nourished when you get this experience. Yes, Krishna is here. I'm serving Krishna. I'm his servant. So fortunate to be serving Krishna. Yeah, I was nourished by that experience of the holy name, experience of serving deities, serving Radha Govinda. Other question? Or anyway, I'm sure you must have experienced. Yeah, okay. If it's that way for you, then great. You can be nourished by bhakti, and you can have pleasure in experience. Yeah, I'm sure they're also interchangeable, but we'll just follow Jiva Goswami, and we just just do your bhakti and whatever. Okay, we will meet in almost a half hour at 10 minutes before 1:00.